Hello and welcome to Writing About Dragons and Shit, a podcast where two authors and writer get together and talk about the ways that they tell stories. I'm Trevor Bettis, your resident writer of Idle Champions of the Forgotten Realms and host of Too Many Podcasts. And with me each week are two amazing people who are.
I'm Erin M. Evans. I write fantasy novels. I'm best known for the Brimstone Angel Saga and Empire of Exiles.
B. Dave Walters, Erin M. Evans, and Trevor Bettis, superfan.
How y'all doing? Okay. That is what we're coming into this episode with. It's okay.
That's the energy.
Yeah. I mean, that heartfelt heaving sigh. Yes.
I was gonna clarify. This is the sound of writers working.
I'll tell you two things. I got a disappointing piece of information personally, but a very encouraging piece of information professionally. And then right before we went live, I was just saying I'm working on the screenplay. I'm working on the finale, and I was calculating how long it would take to sail on the Black Sea from a port city in Romania to a port city in Russia. That was where my brain was mere moments ago.
The answer, for the record, is 33 hours.
See? Writer's working.
Mm-hmm. Gonna go right back to it when we're down here with these beautiful people.
I am a little burned out, I'm finding. Like, I'm trying to take a writing break, but then it's like, that's what I do. So I'm a little like, what am I doing with my time now?
Yeah.
I don't know. I cleaned the sink drain today. Hey. That's a thing.
came back with all your fingers too, so final destination, screw you.
But the thing is though, is that like I count that because like obviously I knew that's what you were doing, but like you just finished working on parts of big books, and this is kind of that important time where it is like that, you know, okay, I'm not gonna do this for a little bit to recharge.
Can't pour from an empty cup.
And I have to admit, like, I know we have questions that we're going to answer, but just as a slightly little tangent, what do you guys do to refill your cup? Because I'm finding that stuff that I did before isn't quite working. And I know that to a certain extent, the answer is time. but I would like other answers. What's your one weird trick for feeling like in a more creative mood?
Peter's like, well, first I have to put myself in that thought process because I've never been there before.
No, you know, I'm not going to lie. It formed in my head to be like, I'm just telling him it never happens. No, that's not true. That's not true. The well is deep, but the well is not infinite.
Yeah.
You know, believe it or not, I think this is part of why I always preach the gospel of multiple projects, because there was a point in my life where I had real writer's block, where there was nothing, like the inner eye was black, but that was mostly due to external life pressure. You know, just a lot was happening. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like I'm done telling stories. It's like, I was getting beat up on all sides and that switch just sort of went off.
Yeah.
In general, if I can work on something else, that still scratches the itch, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, there's times that I get, you're so in the habit of doing something. I think if speaking for myself, the pressure is not necessarily the act of writing. The pressure is reaching a certain deadline on a certain project. Mm-hmm. So maybe even just being like, I'm gonna just sit down and tickle the ivories, and even I don't know what's gonna come out. You know what I mean? And maybe you're gonna write 100 words of an ode to Dr. Seuss, and then get up and go have some coffee. You know what I mean? Because that's what happened today. So you know, so you've scratched the neural impulse that to now is the word time, with still having no pressure.
Yeah,
that works for me.
I do agree with what B. Dave said. I'll do that sometimes where I'm like, oh, maybe I'll just work on something else for a while. But there are those times where it's like, I want to step away from writing for a moment, because there's definitely been times where I'm like, I'm not getting the joy that I did. I can do the act. I can sit down and write some words and everything, but it's not like, as much as it's draining, it's like filling that creativity cup, right?
Yeah.
And it's no longer filling it. It's not going there. And so what sometimes I will do is work on something else creatively, like not for like a project or anything, just like I might sit down and like I'm like, oh, I'm gonna get back into painting minis for a little bit. So like I'll have a week where like I'm at my desk and I'm painting minis or something like that, or I'll get back into drawing maps, or just these, you know, these side hobbies that ADHD has been great at, like, oh, let's do a little bit of that, let's do a little bit of that. And I get to feel that creativity again, and it reminds me of like, oh yeah, no, I like this. I like doing this. And to the point until I feel like writing is going to do that again.
Okay, so, cool.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that was, what?
I just say more than anything, just, you know, being gentle with yourself and realizing that you can't make a mistake and you can't do it wrong, and there's no wrong way to feel, you know, that's all.
100%. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like that unexpected short topic there. That was good.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're gonna do a listener episode because we are still catching up on our listener mail, and we're just getting into June.
Hooray! But send in more questions. We don't want to run out, folks.
100%. We don't want to run out. You listen right now. You're like, I kind of had this idea floating around my head. Take out your phone or whatever. Use the emails. Write that question into writing about dragons and shit. @gmail.com. As I said to Aaron earlier this week, I really should have made that email shorter. But
that's a lot of characters.
Do that.
But counterpoint, these people like writing, so there you go.
And Aaron read the question last week, and I really like not having to read on air, so Aaron's gonna do it again this week because she's awesome.
Okay. I'm gonna be the question reader, or the letter reader. Okay, so this one looks like it is a specific question about a project.
Okay.
So you have, hello from Denmark.
Hello.
That's exciting.
Oh, hello.
I've been enjoying your podcast, and it's been helping me make progress in my writing endeavors. I do, however, have an idea that's been rattling around in my brain that I would like your advice on. I have this idea for a story with a language of power, such as from Aragorn or the Kingkiller Chronicles. However, in these stories, the language is usually constructed very simply, mostly verbs, nouns, and limited adjectives, and barely any grammar. I had an idea for a magic system where the grammar of the constructed language was essential, such that instead of saying fire plus ball plus fly for a fireball, you could say burn in the imperative mood. So you would have a main character who goes on a quest to discover the lost grammar rules to become a better spellcaster. I, however, don't know if this is a good idea or if it will feel too much like grammar lessons in school. And if the idea is feasible, then how to actually write it in the text in an understandable way. I hope the question makes sense, and I hope to hear from you. Best regards, Emil.
Share your thought, because I too have a thought.
All right, here's the thing. I think you can make almost anything work, but here's what's critical. You have to be really passionate about that thing, and you need to be the kind of person who is passionate in a way that you can get other people excited about that thing.
Yeah.
It's only going to sound like schoolwork if you're focused most on conveying the information and not on getting the other person hyped up about the imperative mood. I love this kind of shit about language, but fundamentally it can be really dry. And so that's not your story. That's part of it. If you're going to do this, that can be part of it. But again, you have to figure out a way to convey this to people in a manner that they're like, they're excited about the imperative mood. And that question, that's sort of like, how do you write it? And beyond that, that is your journey, Emil. That is what you're going to have to figure out.
I heard a heavy sigh from Trevor also there before I said
it
anything.
Wasn't a heavy sigh. I was breathing. Well, one of the things that did jump out at me is, again, they said a thing like, I don't want it to feel like a lesson. And in my head, it was just like, what if you did? Like, what if you wrote this as like a young adult or young reader novel that was kind of like a thing? It was like, you're going to get a really cool fancy land and also learn some grammar.
Subjunctive is.
Exactly. I don't know. That's the thing that hopped out at me. That was my initial thought. I want to hear what B-Dave has to say.
Oh, this is for B-Dave.
No, I'd hate it. You know, I have a degree in English, but I'm not a grammar dude. The scientific part of the English language nearly killed me, and I almost didn't graduate. Like phonemes and morphemes and glottal stops and all that shit, I still can't tell you what they are. I mean, I just by
that last part, I'm just like, you're just saying Willy Wonka words now.
No, those are all things. Yeah, right. So, You know what sucks? The noise gate.
That's the glottal stop.
Yeah. The noise gate stopped you. That's like, yeah, you just made a face. Yeah.
I mean, I did, because the glottal stop is like, if you don't, you have unvoiced, but if you're not voicing anything, you don't hear, you just hear a little weird click.
You are correct that it is not. That is a.
I'm the opposite. PTSD. I love this stuff.
Let me tell y'all a quick detour, and then I really am gonna answer Emil's question. Because if you've been listening, you know that you've earned a detour. So when I was in school in my senior year, I made a point of taking all of my hardest classes early, because I was like, if something goes wrong, I want another bite at the apple in my final semester. And if everything goes well, then my final semester's easy mode. So my last semester was truly a lot of 101 and 201 classes, because I just stacked up all the hard stuff. And I had had a class about Milton, John Milton, the poet. And I just became obsessed with Paradise Lost. I don't know why. I just love that to the core of my being. I can still quote whole entire passages from Paradise Lost. Everything Milton was trying to get across in that poem, he was talking to me. As you might imagine, in a school full of young adults, in a class full of young adults, the rest of the class could not give a shit. So every class is me and the teacher very enthusiastically talking about Paradise Lost, and no one else caring even a little bit. What? So, got an A in that one. So I come around to History of the English Language, which was a required course, a core curriculum for the degree, and that same guy happened to be teaching it. And it was just crawling on my hands and knees over broken glass. Because, again, it was the science of language the science of English. And it just, my brain didn't want it. And it was so hard. And I'm convinced to this day I didn't pass the final. And he just gave it to me because of our bond from the other class. I was gentleman enough not to make him say it out loud. I fought to the end, but I left very much feeling defeated. So, that being said, this is not my thing. Now, however, along with that, I would say, to Aaron's point, you know, again, that is not what your story is about. That's not the theme. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that happens. Mm-hmm. You're describing the Force. Star Wars is not about the Force. Harry Potter's not about magic. You know, it's like those are things that are a backdrop in context for the other things that are happening. So that's a thing. That is not the narrative. The other thing is, you know, part of the reason why we've got so many fonts and things on our computers is Steve Jobs personally was a calligraphy fan. That was personally his jam. So he just dropped a lot of fonts in all the writing programs.
That's
why. Like, that him personally is why we, you know, Arial and Calibri and, you know, all of that business, why anybody cares. Because before that, it was all... Calibri is kind of typewriter font, so I guess that was the one we did have. it wasn't a thing. You know, newspapers were all the same, and typewriters were all the same. So there's a world to exactly what Aaron said. You can kind of harness this passion and maybe make it interesting. If I were challenged to do this, I don't think I would ever say the words like, no, you have to cast the spell in the subjunctive, because I feel like I'd throw the book against the wall. I would have your wise teacher basically say it. You know, when you're like, not Wingardium Leviosa, it's Leviosa, you know? If it's like, you shall burn, it's like, no. Burn you must, and then the forest explodes. You know what I mean? And you're like, ooh. Ooh, okay. You know, and it's you get it across by them learning that way. And if you do it really, really well, you can have a situation like, I know Jim Butcher pulls this off in some of the Dresden Files, that you know what some spells are, and you know, so you know that when Harry casts them, you're like, ooh, he mad now. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah. Oh, I hate that I got to that point, but
ooh. You're in trouble now. You know what I mean? Like, you can scratch that itch. Yeah. God damn it. Thank you for coming with me on this journey, Trevor.
No, that was good. Actually, Yeah. Quick tangent. The reason why when you said Star Wars is not about the Force, and the listeners probably heard me go, God, I love you for saying that, is because I went to a panel once at Comic-Con, and there was a whole panel of Star Wars authors, and this person got up at the podium and was like, I can't remember who it was, and I wouldn't name anyways, but they were like saying, like, hey, you know, are you gonna do this series is all about the Force and everything, are you going to do any more books that are about non-Force sensitive people? And someone at the panel was just like, well, Star Wars is about the Force, and like, uncorrect. You can see everyone in the room react. Yeah. Just like, huh. Yeah.
it is not. I mean, they're space wizards, but I mean, just like, you don't have to talk about where Gandalf and Saruman's powers actually come from.
Yeah.
You're like, these are the powerful wizards and they're on opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
I mean, and I refer to the will of the living force on a daily basis now. But still not what the story is about.
It's the people that wield the force.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
I was going to say for my answer for it, like, I do think that you could, like, kind of what both Aaron and Beatty have been saying, like, you could take this and do something thematically with it. I once got a wild idea. I'm like, okay, well, what if like magic was like coding? And so what I did is I blocked out some time with my friend who is a coder, and I'm like, explain coding to me. And while he's explaining it, I'm going through my head and trying and like looking at like fantastical ways to kind of illustrate that with magic. And so maybe that's the thing, like, you don't say this is about grammar, but the way that the system works, you understand that its foundation is grammar matters, but like, that's not the thing that's really showing to everyone. It's the way it's used that pulls people into that system.
And you could even say it once, you know, or you could have a throwaway gag of me with the English degree. The thing you do to sentences where you break it up and you put the like you,
diagram, the
breaks. Yeah, diagram, yeah, yeah. You can have like a scene where they diagram a spell once, you know. I mean, and somebody can say out loud, no, you move that here, move that there. If you this prefix, this suffix, it will change what happens.
Yeah,
and then you GG.
Yeah, I will genuinely. Just, oh, sorry, go ahead.
There's one last little thing. You know, I've brought up A Fire Upon the Deep by Werner Vinge more than once, who is a computer science professor at UC San Diego, or at least he was. I mean, this book was forever ago. The man may be long retired or quite frankly dead. I don't think so, though.
But I'm not
is he dead? I don't think it, well, you know, hey, who knows? What even is linear time? Recent.
Well, let me, you finish your story and I'll just double check.
Well, I complain so much about him including blocks of HTML code at the end of every chapter that you have to extract the messages from, but he's like, screw you, that's my thing. And people love those books.
I am incorrect. He is still alive. He is 78.
Well, there you go. You know, that's like being dead.
So, oh my God.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a world where you just, you turn into the skid, man, you know, then you're like, I am a grammarian, F all y'all. Yeah.
It's fair.
I know Aaron was about to make a point, but
cool,
now
Anderson,
she.
I think is what I think of. Anyway, what I was going to say is actually genuinely kind of like.
Shout out to the homie.
Like the idea of having like characters who are essentially like a descriptivist and a prescriptivist, and if the prescriptivist is like, we need to go resurrect this grammar, the descriptivist is like, nobody uses that grammar for a reason. And I would find this delightful.
It does sound
if
cool.
You and this is the kind of thing too, is like I'm saying, I love this sort of technical shifting of language and the way we describe what happens. Like, this is one of my favorite parts of linguistics, so I'm already like pumped for the possibility of it. But again, like, the thing I'm interested in is how do the people handle this and react to this, right?
Yeah.
But this I think is true about most magic systems. I'm not really hyped for a magic system. I'm hyped for watching people use and figure out a magic system. All right.
Thank you, Emil.
To the hosts of Writing About Dragons Engine. Thank you for your advice the last time I emailed a question. I have finished the first draft of the novel I mentioned in my last email and will be starting to edit this very bad draft shortly.
Hooray!
Yay!
Yeah.
My question is, what is your approach to the very first steps of the editing process? And I'm always happy to hear do's and don'ts, general advice, etc. I'm a bit stuck on where to start. I know my novel has some major fixes that I noted while writing, but I So I can't decide if I should start with the problems that I know exist or if I should go back to the start and work more linearly. She says, yes, you can use my name if you want. Sincerely, a very tired but absolutely stoked writer, Kylie. Good job, Hooray! Kylie!
Good job, Kylie.
Yeah.
Again, I told you, it's the feeling of accomplishment of finishing my first book is one that has never subsided, and I don't think ever will. Like, it was just such an immense feeling of having brought something to life. So congrats on joining our fine fellowship of people who've completed manuscripts. For me, I think there's no wrong way to do it. I think the only thing that I would counsel everyone do when it comes to editing is, again, put it away for a while. And by a while, I mean days to a week, as much as a month, maybe not more than a month. Because
I usually say a month.
You know, it's just the only reason I would not necessarily say a month is if you're super pumped. You know what I mean? Like riding high. You know, you don't necessarily want to lose your momentum. But I'd say a minimum 72 hours. Minimum.
Yes. And minimum.
That's pushing it. For me, I would say if you know something's broken and that's where your attention is going, I think do go fix that, because it's just going to keep, you know, picking at the back of your mind until you do. For me, I told you, writing and editing are two different processes, but I do a kind of bizarre fusion of the third one where, again, I tend to write late and I tend to write until I'm tired. So the first thing I do every session is go back over the last bit that I just wrote and read it and give it like at least like a little patch job, like right then, like some of my note doesn't work, I move it around and I kind of do like a little spackle right then. Yeah. And then I've got a rolling start into the next thing. So by the time I get to the end, usually, and because I'm such a fiend for outlining and plotting, I usually don't have any big structural issues, because usually I should have found those during the outlining and the beats and that whole bit. So I will just go back to the beginning, go through it, smooth it out the best I can, and then hand it off to somebody else to read, because inevitably they're going to see something that I didn't, because that's the way our brains work. Your brain will show you what you meant, not what you said, which is the real point behind the break, by the way, to give your cognitive ability time to kind of like separate itself from the intent, and then you'd be able to see it clearly. But that's my thought. I don't know that there's just a gospel right or wrong way to do it, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think you're right. Like, give yourself a little bit of space, because you need to come up for air. You need a little bit of distance in order to see anything. Which might be, you know, I have historically, I finish a first draft and I immediately fling it to somebody who's going to read it for me and give me feedback. I don't go back and polish it. I know it's a mess. I know it's not done. And I am like, cool, it's not quite done. And I want to know what else I can do. So before I polish it and sand all the corners and stuff like that, I just tell me what's going on here. Now that I am sending things to editors, I will try and do a spell check pass. But at that point, I've been dealing with this book for so long that I am going to do stuff that's stupid, like delete things that are important, because like, oh, I say this later. So I was like, yeah, you say it later. You have to set it up here. Like that kind of like chaotic energy doesn't need to be in the first draft. So I don't let it sit. I don't look at it again. I have people that I've agreed to read, or that have, I am contractually obligated to allow to read. And so then I just sort of launch it over to them. And I just don't look at it for a while. And I usually break and I will start reading it a little bit while someone else is working on it, and make my own kind of notes about things I want to do. Because that's another thing, is like, people are going to tell you what they want to see changed. If you are, you know, again, if you are contractually obligated to listen to that person, then you have to listen to that person. And if they are someone giving you advice, then you are going to, and even then you want to kind of put it through a filter of like, what is this doing to the work that I created, and how do I implement it? Right. But you're also going to have your own things. I just did the revisions for Relics of Ruin, and there was a section where I just didn't like it. I didn't like it. And there was not a single note on it from my editor, but I was like, no, I know they could do this better. And I worked out what was wrong with it. And I kind of rewrote the whole thing. And I think it's a lot stronger for it. So like, you're going to see things in your own work that other people aren't going to see. You understand your own work in ways other people aren't. But having an outside set of eyes, that for me is very, very necessary.
And this is where I insert again, especially if you hear the same thing more than once, because once may be purely subjective. Mm-hmm. You may just do something that isn't to a person's taste.
Yeah.
But if two or three people tell you the same thing, then you're like, okay, you know, and I don't mean like obvious things like spelling. I mean, like,
yeah.
You know,
the word like, is spelled the way the word is spelled.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I kept quiet during this because I haven't done this to in a successful way, but the what I've worked with is having those notes off to the side that I'm like, okay, these are things I wanted to go back and fix, and essentially going through those, finding the ones that were like, you know, notes that were like, oh well, this needs to be done back here or something like that, and I didn't really have a good idea of how to do it. And last time I did it, I used Aaron's suggestion of making an outline.
That's the thing I forgot I was gonna say.
The outline of the revision and what you're gonna do and where things are gonna go, and that really helped out a lot with it, and it gave me more of a focus, because at first I was like, okay, well, I didn't look at it for a while, I'm going back to it, oh god, there's a lot of words, I don't know what to do with all these. And having that even just few first steps helped me figure out like, okay, this is the way that I think I want to go about doing this, and then going, then getting in there and starting to change things. Like, maybe first I would go in with the notes ones and go, okay, these are the ones that weren't outline worthy, these are just things that need to be changed, go through, do a pass of those, knock those off the list, then take the outline and go with it. So I think the thing is a process of it, and it's gonna be like all writing things where the process doesn't work every single time. It's gonna change up depending on the project and everything like that, and you just kind of have to go with the flow.
Yeah, and your own vibe. Because I mean, I've known people that love editing. Those people are usually editors. Yeah.
I love the subjunctive, and I love revisions.
You know, I think I've shared this with you before. I hated rewrites so much that a teacher of mine required three drafts for everything. I would write the final and then go write two bad decoy papers. Yeah.
Oh gosh, darn it. All right, let's go to the next one. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Greetings, tangents and lady.
I love it.
When listening to other writing podcasts, I have heard the notion that while fantasy and science fiction are valid consumer genres, as a writer, they are merely settings, and another genre such as action, adventure, romance, mystery, horror, etc., must be used. What are your thoughts? Keep being awesome, Jeremy. I have two thoughts here.
Please proceed, because my thoughts are compiling over here.
So one thing is, it is accurate to say genre is fundamentally a marketing category. It tells people where to shelf the book. That said, knowing what is expected in the genre is sort of going to help you aim at the audience. So there are keys about the genre which will tell the audience you will like this book. And so I think the idea that fantasy and science fiction are just settings is kind of oversimplified. They are aspects of story that absolutely affect setting, because they establish truths about the setting, about sort of like, you know, magic or technology or location that are not givens, right? In the same way that you would say like, oh, it's a thriller. The thriller is probably going to take place in the real world. I think it is a strength of these that you can take another genre and put it on top.
Yeah.
That's hard to do in other genres. There are things about other genres that frequently sort of restrict them in, but you can change the setting and therefore make it into a fantasy or a science fiction. However, you can have a fantasy story that isn't also a romance or a horror or I think action adventure is also one of those that's sort of like, one could argue that's merely a plot.
Yeah.
That's and so this comes down to what is a genre, right? It is a collection of setting and plot and character tropes that are various levels of flexible. And fundamentally, genre is a marketing category.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time you get, especially when you get to the edges, it's like, is this fantasy anymore? Like,
One of the things that I was thinking about while you're talking was like, imagine if Empire of Exiles was in the mystery section. Like,
right?
Someone pick it up and get into it, and they're just like, oh, this is a lot.
That would be a very, like, in the same fashion that some people read that book and go, oh my God, it's the plot is so complicated. I have to follow all this stuff. I'm not here for it because it does have a mystery plot and they're looking for a fantasy plot.
Yeah.
And again, like, I think fantasy is very flexible on plot. Like, you can do a mystery plot, you can do a romance plot, you can do a horror plot, and it's in a fantasy setting, and it will be shelved as a fantasy novel. And that's not as true with, like, you know, like a romance novel. You can do, like, a paranormal romance, you can do a romance with a mystery, but the romance has certain expectations of character or plot.
Yeah.
And so it is, they're both, I think science fiction and fantasy are both very flexible, and the setting is the least flexible aspect. Like, you got to have something sort of magical and extraordinary in fantasy. It doesn't have to be magic, right? You can have like another world that's sort of, you know, different and the magic is dead or something. Like, there's a lot of fantasy that you get down to the edge and you're like, what's fantastic about this? But whereas I think other genres, you have more that strictness is more in the plot or in the character arcs or something like that.
Yeah.
So I understand where the idea comes from, but I don't agree with it.
Yeah. Cause like, you know, like, cause I'm like, even just going over ones in my head of like, what, like Alien is a sci-fi movie, but it was a horror movie. Right. Like it's an interesting one where, like, yeah, it's kind of, I hate to say it, it's kind of just the vibe of the thing, right? Like, yeah. Like Lord of the Rings is an extremely dense book. Like, even if there was, like, say, an action adventure section, like Lord of the Rings being on the same shelf as like any fiction book that was an adventure book, that's a lot.
Yeah. I feel like this is one of those things where you could argue that different genres are actually not genres, but expectations of some other part of story.
And honestly,
so
then
one must combine them. So perhaps you say that Lord of the Rings is a fantasy in its setting, but a historical in its plot and character structure. And even then, I feel like at that point, we're getting into a very academic space.
Yeah.
I think the argument is very reductive. Because to me, the boundaries of fantasy and science fiction are how rooted in reality is this story going to be? And is this story going, if it's not rooted in reality, is it going to skew towards the fantastical or is it going to skew towards the technological in extremely broad strokes? That's what I'm thinking. I think if you start to say that's not a genre, it is simply a backdrop, I think you keep whittling it down until you get to, you know, the seven fundamental stories, you know, person versus person, person versus nature, person versus self, you know what I mean? It's like, then that's true of all of them, you know, like, because lots of stuff happens in the Lord of the Rings. I mean, you have action, you have romance, you have drama, you have tragedy, you have horror. All of those things happen in the scope of that narrative, but it's a fantasy story, you know, like, and I think you take something like Blade Runner. If you don't put it in a setting where replicants are real and feasible, it's no longer that thing. And so I don't know that you can just say, well, Blade Runner's just a drama. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, wasn't gonna say curveball. Is Macbeth a fantasy? There's magic in it.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, well, see, that was something that I thought about, because like there's Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. That's in fiction. It's not in fantasy.
So this is gets into sort of like a, again, and actually, yeah, right? I think fundamentally what this actually is about is, what does the word genre mean?
Yeah.
Right. Like when we say genre for different genres, that has different expectations that attach to it. And so because fantasy is very flexible on these other axes, then it feels like not a genre, but all those other things are kind of the same way. One other thing is sort of like, are we talking about something that is sort of going to be sold commercial, it's going to be sold as literary, it's going to be sold as upmarket, which is something that I still don't, I don't know, it feels very
upmarket,
I don't like it,
girl.
Anyway,
she's a writing that.
Because like, which, because there is like this audience that will read what are fundamentally fantasy stories, but they don't want them to be called fantasy because that feels like they've, it makes them think of sword and sorcery and stuff like that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you end up with things like Margaret Atwood famously saying she doesn't write fantasy, she writes speculative fiction, right? And Oryx and Crake is fundamentally, that's not fantasy, but that is science fiction, right? Or, you know, and a lot of her work has some kind of like magically kind of elements, like more magical realism weirdness, right? But
mm-hmm.
But at any rate, like there is some stuff that gets sort of aimed at a different audience, and it's not the audience that's looking for you know, like the elves and dwarves and stuff,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still like fundamentally, like, you know, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell is a good example, and then also her other novel Piranesi, which I would say is even less clearly, I loved Piranesi, but it is even less like got classic fantasy bits. And it won a, I believe it won a Hugo, or it was at least nominated,
yeah,
which is,
yeah,
like
I think
the
it was
biggest
nominated
award for fantasy novels. Like there isn't just understanding, like, no, this is definitely magical weirdness, even if it is a meditation on what is identity and what is trauma and how do these interact.
Yeah, that's interesting that, because I guess it's the plot, I guess. I mean, I would submit that that woman's personal relationship with the publishing industry is why it got put in fiction. Because I think everything yeah. about that you could apply to the Dresden Files books, you know, and
yeah.
those
well,
don't
yeah, it's
get
just
filed
like
into fiction.
It's,
yeah.
it's basically this, it's honestly, again, we get into, it's a marketing thing.
There
they
is
say, who do we think we're selling this to?
Yeah.
There is, and it's a big old chunky thing too, but yeah, like you can beat someone to death with Jonathan Strange
selling
and Mr.
it to
Norrell.
People who have to ride the bus at night and need an inconspicuous weapon.
Yep, that's what I keep thunder and lightning for, which are my fists, dear listener. But you know, it's interesting, one of the things, and this is an odd example but it is relevant, that led mm-hmm. to the meteoric rise of Angry Birds and Farmville, those two games in particular,
mm-hmm. uh-huh.
was because people played them on their phones who didn't yep. think of themselves as gamers.
Yep.
And they didn't even think of themselves as playing video games.
Yep.
They're just like, I'm just, you know, futzing around on my phone, you know? And Rovio is like, nobody tell them.
Yeah. they stayed so quiet.
yeah. So there's something, I think there's something too, also almost like, feeding them something so they don't have to admit to themselves that I'm reading fantasy or romance or something, you know? It's yeah. like, no, I'm reading, you know,
this
just this
literary
thing.
This is highbrow,
exactly,
yeah.
you know, I have like, a pinky up and a monocle that. In while I'm reading it here, yeah. you know,
this has yeah. themes, like, okay, because the other stuff doesn't,
right? Yeah, right.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, I guess I would come down on, I do not agree that it is just a container for other types of stories.
I
think that's a feature, not a bug. And if you're going to get that reductive, then you got to take the scalpel to like a lot yeah. of things.
I'm settling in on that too. And very much with Aaron's, like, it is an expectation. Like it is telling yeah. you what kind of thing you can expect from it.
I will also say the other piece of this, when it comes down to where does it get shelved, there's like, what is the bookseller pushing it as? But or what is the market? What is the publisher pushing it as? And then the bookseller will decide where they think it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When I worked at WotC, we did three covers of some Ravenloft novels, some old Ravenloft novels. And they got a very nice kind of horror, like, They were very modern horror looking covers.
Yep.
And 201, they got shelved in general fiction, so nobody found them, right? Like, these were definitely like D&D horror novels, but
okay.
for whatever reason, they're like, ah, these go here.
You just answered a question that I had, because I saw those novels a while ago on Kindle, yeah. And I was like, but these came out when I was looking in the fantasy section. I'd never seen these books.
And that was, I don't know why that happened, yeah. But it was a big deal, right? Because like the people who were looking for them couldn't find them. They were just the original books. Like, with
were those the ones written by Tanya Huff?
One of them was Tanya Huff's
yeah.
book.
Because what I saw, I was like, that just looks like a Tanya Huff novel.
Like, it was like Tanya Huff and P.N. Elrod and Laurel K. Hamilton wrote a
novel
before her Anita Blake books
yeah.
took off. Which was may have been part of the reason they were like, let's do this, because we put Anita Blake's name on it. Which also maybe somebody in the publishing side said, no, shelve these with her other books. But uh-huh. that meant none of them were together if that yeah. was the case, right? Yeah. I don't actually know what happened. I just know when I went to check on the bookstore, I was like, these are not in the right place.
If I had to wager a guess, and I'm very much on the periphery of the publishing side of it, I bet something got bundled where they were like, take six fiction yeah. titles, you know? Mm-hmm. And they were like, what's Ravenloft? It's like, shut up, by the book. You know what I mean? Like here's the bulk order.
What's Ravenloft? Shut up.
Yeah, I mean, having spent years telling a Ravenloft story, I'm here to tell you, that's what Ravenloft is. Shut up. Yeah. That would be my guess. That yeah. somebody like bulk contract, we're not doing horror right now. And it's like, cool. But you'll take our six fantasy or fiction or whatever you said they got put as. Titles, and they were like,
general
yeah, right.
fiction.
Yeah, yeah, they were like, take these general fiction instead. We won't send you the horror fantasy. And they're like,
okay.
Yeah.
It almost works, right? Because the goal with all of this is to put the books where the people who will like the books will find them, right?
Ideally.
Like, that's the whole plan. And so if the books get put somewhere and people are like, what the hell? I don't know what this is. Like, just going to tell your readers, if you like mystery novels, you might like Empire of Exiles. I think it's a pretty good mystery. Mm-hmm. It does turn on some magic stuff, but, you know, strict rule magic. So, like that's kind of just the thing.
I mean, curveball, though, not to call upon the name of She Who Shall Not Be Named, but there is a very heavy mystery component of a lot of those stories, too. You know,
yeah.
The difference between what you did and what she did, and why I enjoy consuming mystery content, especially like, you know, the Sherlocks of the world, where I'm really trying to figure it out type thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the Knives Out and Glass. You know, I'm really trying to put the mystery together. And of course, like we've talked about in the past, you know, ideally, if you've done it right, you figure it out just before, you know, Poirot tells you what happened, you know, not too far in front, you know, not too far behind. But with those stories in particular, I would completely give up trying to figure it out, because it's going to be like, oh, the answer is a magical invisible goblin who walks through walls. Why didn't I know that?
And that's kind of the thing that's I don't know. This is a slight tangent, but there was a thing on Twitter a while back where Joyce Carol Oates basically said you can't have a procedural or a thriller in fantasy, because one is about holding strictly to the rules and one is about who cares about rules, and everybody was kind of dunking on it because that's not right.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I do think
agree.
That's true, that, and it's sort of similar, like I find that often, not always, but often when I am sold a fantasy novel as this is a mystery, and what it is something weird is happening that they're kind of keeping one eye on, but actually this is a different one. The one I'm thinking of was sort of like, there's a mystery, we have to solve this, the world is at stake, but you're really hot. I'm like, you want to write a romance novel? Just write a romance novel. The romance parts are great. Drives me fucking crazy that this character keeps leaving and then coming back and being like, I found out some information. That's not a mystery. That's not a mystery. The people who are solving the mystery should be the people I'm following. Right?
Yeah.
They should be getting clues, and then they should be putting them together, and I should be putting clues together with them. Like, I should be surprised and delighted by the way they're figuring things out. Otherwise, stop telling me it's a fucking mystery, because it's not. Okay.
I agree. I think the consistency is the important part. And I think you can have an invisible goblin who walks through walls be your killer.
Yeah.
But there needs to be some heads up somewhere over the course of the story that there's invisible goblins that walk through walls.
Or like, I mean, if it's going to be something where it's like, we don't know what's going on. And then in the end, it's like, you can't know what's going on because magic. Like, I'm not opposed to that necessarily, right? But then don't frame it up like you're showing me a puzzle I can solve. Yep. Don't sell this to me like it's a mystery. Like, I'm not, again, I want to be surprised. I don't want to be tricked. Don't be like, oh, so like, they're going to be solving this puzzle, but they actually aren't. They're just going to be standing around going, what's happening?
That's why
not the same story.
Hated Cabin in the Woods. But yes, I'm completely with you. I think to call yourself a mystery, I think all of the pieces need to be in front of the reader or the viewer. And whether or not they assemble them correctly in the right time frame is neither here nor there. But theoretically, they need to have had a chance to.
Yeah. You want to go, oh, shit, I should have seen that.
Exactly.
What the what?
Yeah. Yeah. Or I'm going to go back and watch it and be like, oh, he is doing that in the back. Yeah. Oh, you know what I mean? Yeah, that's. Because I mean, Poirot's not a telepath, so you theoretically need to have had an opportunity, and whether or not your little gray cells, you know, work as well as his do is neither here nor there.
Well, do we want to do one more?
I think we got time for one more.
It's a pretty short one too. Okay. I mean, it's a longer letter, but the question seems short. Yep. All right, hello, my tangential friends.
Hola.
Finally got around to the episode about naming things, and it reminded me of one of my favorite fantasy writer tools. If you are working in a secondary world fantasy, want to have a bunch of names for people and places that sound like they are all related, since languages follow their own rules for sounds and structures, there is a site called Vulgarlang that can generate invented languages that follow linguistically sound rules. Then you'll have a lexicon of names that all feel structurally similar. Another favorite writing tool, my handy typewriter. I'll give you one guess for how I never get distracted checking my Facebook or spending an hour choosing my font or using Wikipedia to research noodles. I know you guys have mentioned Scrivener as a good writing tool, but I know there are lots more. What are some of your favorites? Thanks again. Best, Zach. P.S. No P.S. message this time.
I also do want to say here at the top, this is the same Zach that wrote in about the Heya fantasy story. Did write in with a description of it, which I will send you all later.
I'm very excited, Zach. I'm so excited.
This Vulgarlang business looks super cool.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
Part of me is like, no, that's my favorite pre-work thing.
I'm over here. I'm over here putzing with it now.
What was it called?
Vulgarlang. I put it in our Twitter.
Ah.
Yep. Okay. Full disclosure, the first time I loaded it up, nothing happened. In the second time, it was like page can't be loaded, and then I refreshed it and it popped up.
Yeah,
right.
Generate new language. Wow. Okay, that's wild.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Listener, I hope you're doing this too, and not just listening to three people.
Okay. I'm going to stop because I want to, like,
right, yeah.
I'm like, oh, I want to do this, but I don't want to spend this time right now. This is exactly. Very cool. Thank you, Zach. Yeah,
this is pretty cool.
Yeah. Any other writing tools that you can think of that you use?
I will say, before his untimely death, a certain someone also worked on a old school word processor that wasn't connected to the internet, and it accomplished fuck all. But I did just see Christopher Nolan did just make a point that he does something similar. He doesn't have a cell phone and works on a device that is not connected to the internet. So he's like, can't be hacked.
I had a mythology professor in college. That's the last day of school. He essentially just did an AMA for random reasons. And so I was just like, why don't you have a cell phone? And he's like, oh, well, you know, I looked into all of these studies about, you know, cell service and, you know, things. And I was just like, bullshit. You just didn't want people to be able to reach you whenever they wanted to. And he just stopped, gave me a sly smile and kept talking.
Fair enough. I have said I like Ride or Die. It is unfortunately kind of not getting worked on right now, so I'm looking for a substitute. Handy dandy timer, do Pomodoros.
Yep.
Pomodoros for real. They changed my life. It is so useful.
Yeah. I used to use a program called Freedom, which would block the internet for a set amount of time. But I was having trouble with it, and so I deleted it. but I liked it for a long time. It was very helpful. It was basically just like, now you're not going to do that for the next 30 minutes. After I had trouble with it, my husband made a program for me where I started it, and the only way to stop it was to stop and do a complicated math problem. So I just didn't do it. I don't know if I still, I don't think I have that on this computer, but I've had less problems with that lately.
Mm.
That's all I could think of.
I actually have a new one that yeah. I'm kind of surprised I've never talked about before, but I haven't used it in a bit, so that's probably why. I had this app for a while, and it did help me out quite a bit. It's actually from the same creators as Scrivener. It's called Scapel.
It is a
brain
chart, like mind mapping. Like,
yeah, mind map. There we go. That brain chart. A mind map that you're able to, put text blocks anywhere you want, make them any size you want, make them have an outline or anything, connect them, choose the ways that they connect. And you can really just kind of throw out a bunch of ideas and show where they're connected to and have this kind of visual thought process going along. I haven't used it in quite a while, but the times that I did, I cannot tell you how much it helped.
I don't know, what mind maps have never worked for me, and some of it might be my handwriting is my handwriting is so terrible that I'm like
and I mean that's a good thing, you type with this one.
Yeah,
this is the thing. I've used it, and what I like it for is like when I hit a bump and the story is like, this is not making sense. And I need to figure out where to fix it, right? I think going, okay, this node stays, this moment stays. So what can happen here? Lorcan's sister confronts him. Does he kill her? Does she kill him? No, because then the story ends. Does he say this? Does he go along with it? And then just following those paths down, like, which of these is the story that's actually going to work? Like, that kind of thing has helped me where I'm like, I know something comes next, but what is it? Because I'm not feeling any of these, or I'm not sure about these, or the thing I picked didn't work. That is something I really like it for. And that's, I think that's around when I grabbed it, but I have found, that's why I have this big old whiteboard now, because I have found I like to do it like physically.
Yeah.
And sort of spread it all out.
That's the funny thing. That's actually why I stopped using it, because I got a whiteboard. So whiteboard is another one. But I realized we've never actually said this when we talked about Scrivener. Scrivener and Scapel actually have free trials. So if you want to try them, you can do so for free.
Scrivener is a very generous free trial. It's based on how much time you use it.
Yeah, it's 30 days of time, and it's when you use it or something like that. And again, we're not sponsored by them. We just really like these apps.
See if they,
it's true, and we should be. Yeah, right. I mean, them and
And Cutwater
and Scrivener.
And Scrivener. Yep, those are the two. Those are the writers podcast sponsors. I love it. Any other writing tools? Whiteboard is a good one. I can't. I mean, my other one's Vane. I'm just like, just get a keyboard that makes you feel happy while you write on it.
Yeah, I do everything in a Google Doc. I beat it all out in the Google Doc, and then I open up Final Draft. Shout out to Final Draft.
Yeah.
And then I have my Google Doc on one screen, and I have Final Draft on the other screen, and you know, just go through and do what it does.
Yep.
I think another reason why I can't do that thing where it blocks out the internet is I research so much stuff in real time where I'm like, ooh, I need a word for this. Ooh, how long does it take to sail 500 knots?
I did have an app that would let me.
You just gotta like bracket it and come back to it.
I did have an app that would let me choose which sites I couldn't go to, so I could still go to Wikipedia and stuff to look up things. But
yeah,
I think that app was discontinued. So,
Sad all panda. Right.
Well, I think that's going to do it for this week's episode. Thank you all for writing in. Let's go through this. It was Emil, Kylie, Jeremy, and Zach. Thank you all so much for writing into writingaboutdragonsandshit@gmail.com with your questions. And remember, listeners, you can do the same with any question you got floating around your head about writing.
We're almost caught up.
Yeah, it's true. Friends, where can people find you and what awesome things you're working on?
You can find me on Twitter at Aaron M. Evans, and also Blue Sky at Aaron M. Evans, something Bumble. I don't know how that works. Anyway.
Bumble is a dating app. I don't think you meant find you on Bumble.
I don't have time for that. The let's see. Oh, you can join me on twitch.tv/dungeonscrawlers on Mondays at 1:30 p.m. Pacific for concentration check, a co-writing space. Come do some Pomodoro sprints with me. And you can join me on Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. Pacific on the same channel for Fearful Symmetry, a game that I am DMing where I have trapped them all in a dimension full of lies.
I'm sure it's fine.
It's fine. You're definitely going to get out of this alive.
Worst case. Maybe I'll come rescue you, or maybe it's just a demon wearing my face. Ooh. Yeah. when is this going up?
Tomorrow.
Hey, if you come to San Diego Comic-Con, I'm going to be all up in there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you'll know it's me because I'm gigantic and loud. So you see me, come say what's up.
You can find me on Twitter and all those other places at the Trevor. There's an A hiding in there, and I'm also on Fearful Symmetry, hoping that I don't get killed by my Mirror World doppelganger. You know, that would suck.
but we fought a lich. Does he have a goatee? Stab the one with the goatee.
Be sure to check that out 6:30 on Wednesdays on Dungeon Scrawlers, twitch.tv/dungeonscrawlers. But that is going to do it for this week's episode. Thank you all so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, the best way to support is by leaving a review on your podcast service of choice and telling your friends about the show. If you'd like to write in with your own question, like the awesome listeners we read today did, you can send those into writingaboutdragonsandshit@gmail.com. and if you'd like to keep up to date on the show, you can follow us on Twitter @aboutdragons. But until next week, go write about some dragons and shit.
Fuego.